Alright guys, welcome back to another episode of Geeks and Terror, and it's me, Boy Eli.
It's me, Joe.
And we're here to talk about a very interesting topic. So, there was an interesting thing that happened a couple weeks ago. As you guys know, we're big fighting game fans. We watched Capcom Cup. And they recently announced for the next Capcom World Cup, there's going to be the first place winner is going to win. How much money, Joe, again?
Well, I believe the prize pool is going to be $2 million.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if you don't know much about at least the fighting game community, a lot of their tournaments don't have a lot of big prize pools. So, you know, that's pretty big news, especially for like a new for the new Street Fighter VI. Yeah, it sort of shows it's a lot of money, right, for competing in these sorts of things. And for fighting games, they haven't had a whole lot of big prize pools. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's pretty big news that one of the biggest fighting games in the gaming space is getting like huge money. But it's not like video game like esports stuff getting huge prize pools in general. It has a, it's not like uncommon.
It's not
like,
and we're gonna be talking about that.
Yeah, because it is quite interesting whenever we do see video gaming. Because, you know, like, video gaming as a whole has been always, at least when it comes to competitive, like, esports stuff, has always been kind of, like, in a weird spot, mm-hmm. you know? There's always been constant, like, of, like, talk from, like, major media outlets and stuff like that, sort of, like, comparing whether or not, you know, esports is, you know, a sport, like video, it can't, you know, playing competitive video games.
How does a kid, a 13-year-old kid, able to like win $1 million just by playing video games? Does that mean I can do this too? You know, that kind of like narrative that they tend to go with.
Yeah, and I think it's that sort of thing of like, oh, if you know, it's a video game, you know, anyone can play it. Therefore, it's not as,
mm-hmm.
Like prestigious as like professional sports.
Mm.
You know, and like that's why a lot of people get sort of, you know, like a lot of the sort of mainstream news stuff sort of like kind of looks down upon it. But in my brain, I sort of think of it as like, well, anyone can really play like any sort of professional sport when you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
it's time and dedication.
Yeah, like obviously like anyone can play soccer or baseball or football, but not everyone has the like the potential to be an all-time professional at it, mm-hmm. you know? Like, I'm pretty sure there's people out there that, like, complain about, like, say, oh, you know what, these football players are complaining about the money they get. They play a children's sport, when you think about it, you know? There might be some people out there just like, oh, hey, you know, this guy, he just gets a ball all day, you know, like, every once a week or whatever, and he's complaining about not getting paid enough kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think there is, but with video games, obviously, it's more of, like,
And granted, just to set this as before as we continue, we're not saying one is better than the other.
No, I don't think anyone has said that either. It's more of like what people say about esports comparing it to professional sports,
mm-hmm.
like baseball and football and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. But most of this conversation is basically going to also revolve around the idea of basically making money with video games, you know, as a living. Because it's a lot harder than a lot of people would think it is.
Yeah, like, there are, and it depends on what game you're talking about, too.
Yeah.
Like I said earlier, with fighting games, like, the prize pools aren't that big. It really depends on the publisher and their commitment to putting into the competitive circuit.
Yeah.
To get those payments.
And, like, and that's where another thing we're going to talk about, because mm-hmm. like, there's a lot of things where, obviously Dota, League of Legends, I think there might be another game, Fortnite. A lot of people are would ask about like how do you know those games, you know, get so much money. The reason is because, you know, developers put so much, you know, input into like making it so you're able to get money from it. And also the consumers themselves.
Yeah, cuz I know at least for League they do sometimes do these things where in the run-up to, like, the big, like, League of Legends, like, final or whatever, They do things where they can allow consumers to buy like a pack, which will contribute money to the prize pool, and they can get like certain things out of it too.
Mm.
And I know Street Fighter has kind of done this a little bit with whenever a Capcom Cup rolls around,
mm-hmm.
where there is like a Capcom like cup like purchasable thing or something.
Yeah.
Where you can like, oh, buy it. You know, if you buy this, it'll add a couple extra dollars or whatever to the prize pool. You know, so yeah, those are ways of like developers sort of like.
So let's start there. The idea of developers, you know, being able to put in the effort into supporting like pro players and people who you know do this for a living. Because for a lot of people, it's like, well, can't you do that with any game? That's sadly not true. As like, so for a lot of people, they're like, oh, if you play video games, you know, I guess you can make money out of this. Is that? It's not every video game. It's not always a specific competitive game. The reason for that is because, like you were saying, developer support. So, and we're going to use fighting games for an example because this is, because, you know, that was
our story. It feels like it's most prevalent in fighting games.
Yeah.
Where you can see that disparity of, like, you know, depending on the developer, you know, you can get X amount of money from all these tournaments and stuff. Mm-hmm. Or, heck, you have, official, like, world tour circuit, basically, where, you know, you have special, like, licensed events and, like, you can also, like, do, like, a small little grassroots tournament that can participate as well and that sort of thing. Like, Capcom and, like, Bandai Namco have those sort of,
For Street Fighter and Tekken both, respectively.
Yeah, they have those sort of, like, avenues for that sort of stuff, you know?
But some games don't have that. Case in point, so Capcom is, like, best known for some of their fighting games. One of the games that they've, you know, well known to make is their crossover fighting game, like Marvel's Capcom. There hasn't been, until recently, I would say, with Evo, Evolution Championships, where they announced that, yes, we're doing a more Ultimate Marvel's Capcom 3 tournament, and the prize is $25K?
Yeah, $25K prize pool.
Yeah. And that is probably the only time you'll see a huge number for that. And that's not huge compared to what Capcom Cup has said. 1 million.
Yeah, but granted, part of that, I believe, is just, like, the age of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that game came out back in, like, 2011, 2012, I think.
Yeah.
So, obviously, it's not, like, priority for Capcom to, say, make an Ultimate Marvel 3 circuit or whatever for it. And that's sort of, like, the thing with, you know, the developers. They usually just focus on, like, say, like, the current game, right, that they have. So that way, you know, people buy that current game and stuff.
And sometimes the current game isn't the same as the old game.
Yeah, you know, so that's sort of, like, I would say, like, marketing reasoning as to why.
And, well, whatever you may say about, because after Ultimate Marvel 3 came Marvel's Capcom Infinite, and that one barely had a scene in terms of, like, competition, of getting any prizes, because there wasn't any much, like, support for it.
I know that they wanted to do something with it. I think they went through with it. It was, like, a battle. I think it was, like, Battle for the Stones or whatever.
Yeah.
Which is, like, supposed to be, like, its own little competitive circuit for the Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite.
Mm.
But it did have prize pool money. I don't remember exactly how much, but it wasn't. But like you said, like, because of the game itself being a bit mixed in terms of reception, like, there wasn't a whole lot of people playing it competitively, and which, you know, obviously led to eventually, like, Capcom not making, you know, any more, putting any more time into that sort of game or the professional scene, because it's like, you know, no one's playing this game, you know, so.
Yeah, and there's also, like, the fact that, with specifically in fighting games, too, and we're going to get to stuff like Fortnite and all that, is that there's, for fighting games, there's often a lot of love for the old-school classics. They still run Street Fighter 2 Turbo tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
They still run Street Fighter 3 tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
Tekken 3, Ultimate Marvel is another one. and so on and so forth. Like, there's Vampire Savior, which is a game that you've probably all never heard of, but it's technically called Darkstalkers. You ever seen Morrigan? Yeah, no, they still have tournaments for that.
I mean, yeah, but, and again, it's just, there's a lot of grassroots stuff for it.
Mm.
So, like, that's all, like, community supported, right? Like, mm. the community sort of buys into it, and so a lot of those sort of tournaments have, like, hey, pay $10 to get in, and then, you know, essentially those $10 with along with everybody gets pulled into the prize pot,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, whoever wins gets, like, a portion of that money, and so, you know, it goes down further down the list, second, third place, that stuff. And, you know, like, again, it's like, the, like, you know, developers aren't going to be doing much for it because, yeah, they don't have an incentive because it's a game they don't make copies of anymore, and they don't get money from it if you buy it, like, from the secondhand market. So it's just like, I don't know, like, I kind of feel that, yeah, Capcom doesn't do...
And this isn't just a Capcom, this is just, like, any...
Yeah, it's just any game, like, when you're making competitive, like, if you're doing, like, a Halo 2, like, an OG Halo 2, you get your old Xboxes out, LAN tournament kind of thing, I don't think Microsoft's kind of come in and be like, hey, yeah, here's, like, $250,000, you know, $250,000 for our prize pool. They're probably just like, well, I mean, we don't, I, if you're playing this on the Master Chief Collection, maybe I would give you money, but you're not, so, I mean, I just, you know. It's just kind of one of those things.
We want to focus on the new one because we can promote the fuck out of that, and we can sell a lot more stuff through that.
Yeah, which it's not like I don't think
it's not. It's totally understandable from a marketing aspect, right?
Yeah, it's
from a business aspect. It makes sense. Like there's you can't do anything. You can't update the old games because that's a lot of work, and you don't want to put too much money into that. And you know it's a different hardware. Kind of stuff like the things that people do to support current like competitive games aren't the same as you would do for like an old school game. So those 10 games tend to be like more grassroots, low, and very like community built. Look at the Smash Melee.
I mean, yeah, and that's what I was gonna get to. Like Smash is in that sort of weird spot. Like Ultimate is obviously still popular, and heck, Nintendo I think wanted to do like. It's always been kind of weird with Smash and in terms of, like, as an esport. Obviously, with Melee, they've had this weird sort of, like,
relationship. Back and forth.
Yeah, back and forth of, like, not wanting people to, like, stream it and, like, do stuff to where, like, the community essentially kind of fought back. And, like, when Nintendo's, like, you know, lifted some of those restrictions and now we're in sort of a situation where they because Nintendo wasn't doing... like essentially enough the Smash community went out and you know made their own Smash World Tour sort of circuit for Melee and Ultimate, and then you know Smash decided to join up with Panda Global to make the Panda Cup, you know, which would be pretty much a Nintendo backed competitive circuit for the Smash community, and you know due to some shenanigans that's sort of been put on the back burner. But yeah, it's just kind of a you know, it's a weird relationship, and it's it's a clear sign of like, yeah, no developers, you know, it's mainly you know they are the primary chiefs of like, hey, this game is viable as a competitive scene, you can make money out of it, instead of just like having it be sort of a grassroots community thing, because when it comes to Melee and stuff, it's all like. Backed by the community and stuff, you know, like hell, I'm pretty sure like a good chunk of the top players are like don't make a whole lot of money from playing Smash, and that's sort of the sad thing about it. Like, you know, just to like jump a little bit ahead, like there was that Fortnite Cup back in like 2019, I think.
Yeah,
where some kid won like $3 million. Dollars or something, and that's like more than like 10 times the amount of money, or like I think there's like a crazy statistic where like that's more money than any competitive like Smash player who consistently makes like top you know one or two appearances mm-hmm. makes in their entire career.
Yeah, because it's a game, again, that's old that a company doesn't want to back anymore because there's no way to promote it further.
Or, you know, in the case of Nintendo, they just don't care about the competitive scene in yeah. general and just find it a little weird. You know? Yeah. So, yeah, like, the idea of, like, oh, you know, to people who think that it's easy, it's not really easy. No, it depends on the game, you know?
It depends on the game, and it also depends on the developer themselves. So, obviously, you know, you mentioned Fortnite. Fortnite's made by
Epic,
which not only makes money through Fortnite, but through Epic Games.
I mean, yeah, they're a game store, and their use of the Unreal Engine that they license out to other companies, you know, so they make a bunch of money. I mean, heck, obviously, like, Fortnite itself has made a bunch of money, which is why they're willing to, like, have these insane pots, you know. But at the same time, if you think, oh, I can just play Fortnite, a battle royale, where it's random and stuff, and I think I can win a couple of championships, like, it ain't that easy, because, you're going to be playing with a bunch of kids and stuff who know how to friggin' build giant, giant, like, structures the size of the Empire State Building and just going, like, what the hell?
Yeah.
So, and that's the other thing when it comes to sort of, like, you know, that whole idea of, like, esports being, like, super easy to get into, where the consensus is that, oh, it's just me pushing a bunch of buttons, you know? It's not that physically taxing on you and stuff, which is, like, I mean, there's a lot of mental things going on with it, and obviously I think there's still physical stuff going on with it too, because you need to have, like, good rest and stuff like that to you know, like, be there's able to play at a high level.
There's a health side to it, not just sitting down and just, you know, looking at a screen all day.
Yeah, like, there's a lot I think competitive players have to do in order to stay healthy and make sure they're playing at the highest level, you know? And I think that's sort of, like, half the other half of the reason why people, like, at least mainstream, like, sort of people sort of look down on, like, esports. It's like, oh, you know, that's just something
anyone can do.
Yeah, anyone can do. Like, it's super easy, right, to play a video game when clearly it's not. It's not just pressing buttons and stuff. Like, I mean, if you took the time to, like, League of Legends, yeah, you could boil it down to just clicking on your mouse and, like, pressing a couple of buttons on your laptop or computer or whatever. But the mechanics and all the intricacies that go into the meta and stuff are just so complex that I think an average person trying to get onto League are just going to be so confused, you know?
Yeah, no, there's a lot of intricacies. And even then, like, you know, the game that you could get into might be more difficult to find such support to. Because, like, I don't tend to, I don't know, I don't play Fortnite, I don't look for Fortnite games or anything of the like, but rarely do I ever see any, like, you know, grassroots events.
Yeah, I think that's partially because I think Epic's willing to make these large-scale events and stuff, so... You know, yeah, no, but I think the thing with the Fortnite tournaments, yeah, it is just, you know, it's a lot easier when the developer is willing to put out a lot of money and, like, official support for these tournaments than it is to just make a grassroots tournament kind of thing, you know? Like, there's no need for it, right?
Yeah.
Like, with a lot of the games you've mentioned earlier, with the Street Fighter 3, you know, X-Smash Melee and stuff like that. Like, the need for, like, that community-backed tournament is there because no one else, like, the developers aren't, you know, willing to put the time and effort, or more or less the money into building it up and sustaining, like, a circuit like that. And, yeah, again, like we said, it's not, like... Like, it's understandable why that's the case a lot of the time, especially with those old games, you know. But it's more, it is sort of like, it's a nuanced take of like, hey, you know, you can get into video games professionally and play these games at a professional level. However, don't assume you're going to be making a ton of money off of it day one, you know?
No.
Like, depending on the game, like, yeah, you could be like that kid that won that Fortnite tournament and win a bunch of money. But that's Fortnite, right? If you're thinking about, like, doing that for some other games, you gotta, like, know the... Essentially, you gotta, like, see what the scene is like, you know? And realize that, yeah, all right, can I make a living off of this? Maybe, but to bring it back to fighting games, I feel like a good chunk of competitive fighting game players, yeah, they go to tournaments and make money there, but at the same time, they do other things like streaming, for instance, to, as a way to like ensure that they can still do what they do, you know?
Even have a real job sometimes.
Yeah, there. I mean, I know in terms of the Melee community, I knew that Hungrybox for a little bit was an actual engineer. Like, he went through college, studied to be like an engineer, and was doing that engineering stuff all while playing competitive Smash. It wasn't until I think he joined up with Team Liquid, and I think got more into the streaming stuff where he could be like, all right, let me focus full time on competitive Smash. I think I have enough to where I can kind of sustain myself without doing the engineering stuff, you know? And that's the thing, you know, at least in terms of that sort of community. Like, I feel like it is sort of just, like, you have to, like, sort of, like, plan it out. You know, like, cause I feel like a lot, especially because of, you know, the whole situation back in 2020 when, like, a lot of tournaments had to shut down, not just fighting games, just in general.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of competitive players, I think, had to transition into doing live streaming stuff because, realistically, that was sort of the only way for a lot of their skills. One, they could still hone their skills, right? Through, like, online play and stuff, hopefully. And two, it's a, you know, obviously a decent way of making money as well, you know?
Yeah. No, you're right. And it's one of those things where, like, competitive, you know, gaming is a thing, and it, you can make money off of it, but just because, you know, you can make a load of money out of it doesn't mean it's a secure way to, you know, to live.
It's like, I think it's also kind of, it would be comparable to, say, to, like, being a YouTuber, right?
Yeah.
In that sort of way, like...
Anyone can be a YouTuber.
Yeah, in theory, anyone can make videos on YouTube and stuff and hope to become a big person that can make a living off of it. But considering where YouTube is now, you know, like, back in 2007, 2008, I think it was a hell of a lot easier because, you know, YouTube was still new, no one knew what the hell they were doing, and most of the time they were just posting a bunch of dumb videos that would get viral and stuff. Now you have to... If you're going to be a YouTuber, you need to be more proactive and, like,
be good at social media and like, you know, consistent scheduling.
Yeah, to, like, gain that sort of buildup of support. And, obviously, the YouTube algorithm is a thing. It's a fickle goddess.
Yeah, that it
will,
is.
You know, that will pick and choose whatever decides to be popular for a day. And, you know, hoping and praying that one day that maybe it's you. And maybe you can get a decent chunk of people and then hopefully building a base off of that as well. Because that's also the other thing with YouTubing, right? It's like once you get like a dedicated audience, you know, like it's hard to maintain that. And maybe sometimes it's like maybe your content's getting old. Do you want to change it up? Maybe that drives away your old fans, but maybe you can get new fans. Point is, a lot of complicated stuff when it comes to YouTubing. And to just generally to generalize it all down to being like, oh, YouTubing's easy kind of thing. It's easy to make money off of YouTube, where it's like, not necessarily, you know? Which is why I think back in like 2012, when you like, when it started to become apparent, like, oh, you can make a living off of YouTube now. Like a good chunk of the people that were making a lot of money were Let's Players, right?
Yeah.
Because I think that's where this whole sort of thing of like making video games, playing video games and making a living off of it came from as well. You know, it wasn't just like esports like on the rise and like, oh, you can play video games competitively. It's also just, hey, there's people that are just playing straight up playing games that people are watching for entertainment, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think in that sort of perspective, that's why we got a lot of those sort of like channels where Let's Players, you know, stuff. Heck, I think there was even people who were like making a side gaming channel just to cash in, you know? Like, I'm pretty sure, what's that guy's name? The Game Theory guy.
Yeah.
Also had like maybe a little bit where he would do a little Let's Plays every now and again.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, that's just a thing that was happening back in those days. Where like any sort of big successful YouTuber would also maybe try to see if they can get into gaming. Because hey, you know, people are watching these Let's Players. Let's try to do like a side gaming channel.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it would work. Sometimes did not. You know, so yeah, like it is sort of apparent of yes, you could make a living, but it's not as easy as everybody says.
Mm-hmm.
You got to put in time and effort, which much like an actual sport when it comes to yeah. esports. Yeah, you could make a living off of playing soccer or football, but you better be, like, really, really good at it and hone your skills enough to the point where you can be, say, selected to get maybe a scholarship,
mm-hmm.
to go to a university, to play out in college.
Or be, and, slash be scouted by,
you know, various people to get played into, like, the minor league system, mm-hmm. and eventually go to the pro leagues. That sort of thing.
To give it to like a real world example, what was I forget his? He's one of our players for the Astros. He got scouted. He was like at the age of 40, or 30, was it?
Are you
Gurriel? Gurriel.
Oh, you're talking about yeah.
Why did I forget his name?
It's well. To be fair, like I think part of his story was that he was from Cuba.
Yeah.
And he sort of had to get to the United States by the time he was, like, 30 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, he was playing competitively baseball in Cuba, but he didn't make it to the major leagues until he was, like, yeah, in his 30s, and that's just how it is in Cuba. But I get what you mean,
mm-hmm.
you know? Like, there is a lot of honing your craft when it comes to that stuff. Like, there's definitely, like, at least in terms of baseball, because there is, like, a minor league system, and then you have to get promoted to the major leagues.
Mm-hmm.
There are some players that just take years to being in the minors before they get to the major leagues.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it's like you got to hone that craft and stuff. Because like, I mean, they're still getting paid, but like not as much as say like a major league player would. You know,
mm-hmm. That's where sponsorships come in, and like that's another thing. Sometimes these games are sponsored, and they have a lot of support. Like, I think Evo this year is being sponsored by Chipotle.
But, which is, like, the first time I think they've actually been, like, had that, like, you know, sponsored by thing. Because mm-hmm. for the most part, I feel like Evo's always just been like, oh, it's just Evo, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, considering the size of Evo, you know, it gets bigger every year. It does make sense for that to happen. Like, I mean, to be fair, it happens with everything, really. Mm-hmm. Like, I think the only, like, when it comes to, like, major sports... Like, when it comes to, like, major sports, I don't think the Super Bowl is... Is the Super Bowl, like, sponsored by...
By either Pepsi or Apple.
Yeah.
Like, that's, I know, why, that's why the halftime show is, like, Pepsi presented. Because, like, it's...
Yeah. But, yeah, no. I mean, that's... No, I mean, that as well is where they get money, too. Because sponsors will dump money in. Because it's like, hey, show our stuff and we'll give you some money to run this event kind of thing, you know? But yeah, no, and heck, I mean, like I said as well, at least when it comes with competitive gaming, there is like teams and stuff like Team Liquid, Panda Global, Echo Fox when it was still around, mm-hmm. you know,
Renegade.
I think T1 is also a competitive.
Moist.
Yeah, the Moist Esports team. Yeah, you know, like all that stuff. You know, it's just. You know, people being able to join those sort of esports teams, that also gives them a bit of a steady income as well.
Yeah.
Because they're being paid by a team to play games. Mm-hmm. You know?
Now, of course, we're going off to how making games, how to make money through gaming, but obviously going back to the whole idea of esports, it's totally dependent on the developers and, like, you know, the community itself. Like, sometimes the community will move forward, but there's still a community that supports the old one. Like, yeah, because Overwatch 2, you know, I haven't seen much of it, but I feel like it's, you know, it's still being competitive. I mean, we have our, you know, our Outlaws over here, and there's always an event, something going around about that with those guys. So, like, you know, the community, there's always, like, a community support, whether it be big or small, when it comes to these esports. But, you know, the esports ones, you tend to have the bigger community. I mean, heck, look at League of Legends, how often they sell out crowds.
Yeah, they have full stadiums and stuff. Yeah. Same thing with Dota. You know, that's, I think that's sort of like the crazy thing when it comes to like those types of esports. Heck, StarCraft 2 back in the day, like in South Korea, they would actually play that shit on TV. Like the competitive StarCraft 2,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of insane to me that StarCraft 2 was like, because this is a strategy game, you know?
Yeah.
And that shit was like so competitive. And nowadays, when you don't hear like StarCraft 2 in the conversation anymore when it comes to esports. It's Fortnite, League, Dota, competitive shooters like Overwatch or Counter-Strike, Valorant. You know, like those types of games are getting like the sort of the big bucks now in terms of like getting like the spotlight in terms of the esports, not Dota. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sorry, not StarCraft, which. I don't know. I guess like when in my just to get a little off topic, I feel like when it comes to, like the strategy games being competitive, it's kind of like a higher version of chess, if you will. You know,
it basically is.
Which is the other thing where when I think about it, it's like okay, so people don't have issues with like chess being like seen as a sport, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yet, like gaming is where you draw the line. But like, there's no. Like, you can make the same argument with chess as you make with gaming, where it's like, oh, it's not that physically demanding.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, but it's the mental aspect of chess, you know, like or whatever. I don't know. I mean, not to badmouth chess players, you know.
No, of course not.
I mean, you know, chess players are pretty freaking cool.
Yeah.
You know?
But, yeah, no, I guess to the point of our of this podcast is that, while, yes, esports will... you know, help make a living, it kind of depends on the community and the support and, like, the game you play.
Yeah, and more of, like, it's kind of, like, crazy to see how much money is into gaming, but, like, these, like, esports stuff. But, yeah, you are right that, like, you need to, like, really sort of, like, thread the needle in terms of, like, trying to make it a viable option to make a living off of.
You know? Like any job.
Yeah, because, like, you know, like, obviously, I think that's sort of the thing with entertainment and, like, sports and stuff, you know, is sort of that, like, yeah, you could, like, try and become, like, the best football player ever and stuff, but you also got to prepare for the chance that you might one day have to, like, a life-altering injury where you can't play anymore, so what do you do now?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's your backup plan? Did you make enough money to, like, potentially maybe just retire and, like, live off of your retirement funds? Or, you know, like, or what? You know, that's sort of the thing. Which is why I think, like, you know, with gaming, you know, at least when it comes to esports, a lot of these players are looking at streaming as, like, a fallback. Because it's like, yeah, you have to be a personality and people know who you are because, oh, you're good at that one game and you place in high in a lot of those tournaments. So people obviously are going to watch you because you're good and competitive. And hopefully you have enough of a personality to where people will just watch you because of you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you know, that is that's sort of the sort of take I think we've had. Like, yeah, esports... they're fun. They're cool. There's a lot of money into it, but you gotta really, like, you know, you gotta thread that needle, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can't just spend all this money believing that you can be the next esport, like, champion, like, the next best player in Call of Duty, Fortnite, or whatever, but when it doesn't happen, you've wasted a bunch of money and buying all this stuff. And you're just like, well, shit, I'm not that good, but I don't want to put in the effort. I thought I was good already, you know? Mm-hmm. So why did I spend all this money for
it? And that's why the best way to go about it, just to make it a hobby.
Yeah, I guess, you know, like, as a side thing, and then once you start to see sort of the fruits of your labor mm-hmm. develop, then it's like, okay, maybe I should take the next step, you know?
Exactly. And I guess that's a good place to, like, end the episode, right? Like, it's viable, it's possible, but it's a lot of time and dedication. Making it a hobby probably is probably the best way to go about it. But it doesn't secure anything as to see, like, what, like we mentioned earlier with, like, something like Capcom Cup. The fact that, by the way, this is Capcom Cup 9. It took 9 of these to at least get a, you know, $1 million worth of money. And that's for the next one.
Yeah, and even then, like, when you think about it, it's like, that means it's taken, like, 2 iterations of Street Fighter. Because they started Capcom Cup back with Street Fighter 4 at this point. You know? It's taking them, like, 2, like, generations, essentially, of Street Fighter games to get to a point where Capcom is like, yeah, let's throw in $1 billion as a prize pool or whatever. Yeah, mm-hmm. that sounds pretty cool.
With it, and, like, it's a game that's, like, not as big as, say, well, it's, there's an influence, yes, but it's not as big as, like, League or Fortnite.
It's the top tier of fighting games, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
It's like if Dota or League took, like, the same amount of time as Street Fighter to get to, like, $1 million prize pool. That's how weird that is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, you know, it's just all kinds of craziness without, you know?
Yeah. But anyways, guys, if you take anything, just play games, have fun. If you have enough, if you feel like you can do it competitively, go for it. But anyways, if you enjoyed what you heard, be sure to follow us on social media, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, at The Geek Centurions, where we're most active on Instagram. There you'll find a link to all podcasts we're officially part of, like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, and all that alike. And a link to the YouTube for all you audio listeners out there. And if you want to support us there, go ahead. We also have Patreon for any formal support. And yeah, guys, it's the end of the episode. It's been me, your boy Eli.
It's been me, Joe.
Guys, have a good one. Peace.